I guess just really wanted to open the floor for a sense of any questions you have, and if Ron was, I think, really testing the waters to see if there was interest in using the Waterkeeper model to sort of further issues here. I'm this is new terrain for me. I'm much more used to coming and talking about one of the particular issues I'm working on.
Well, what are some of the issues you've dealt with recently?
So we on sort of the fairly tangible end, we have a big problem with large scale debris, most of it from salmon aquaculture, so cage components as big as this room or bigger that are going about and doing what Ron described ICE doing, you know, scouring the shore and being a problem both aesthetically but also environmentally, especially when there's nets and ropes involved. So
navigation too, then.
Navigation. So we're tracking some of that and have been fairly successful in getting a cleanup of that. And I think we're at the point after 10 years where there's still going to be a sort of large industrial debris. It'll still be an issue, but it's just we're getting close to having that solved because it's now at the point where losing items is potentially becoming more costly than not losing them, right? Mm-hmm. Making sure they're tied up and secured sort of is less costly than dealing with the public pressure and media around losing items. We've just started a project around submerged debris, so there's some pretty significant areas with submerged debris, boats, but mostly aquaculture components, and so we just got some funding to work with the local Fishermen's Association to try and deal with that end of it. There's been a lot of work on pesticide use on salmon farms, so that's been more of an advocacy and public role. We worked very closely with the Environment Canada enforcement team. And, I mean, it was their work, right? We weren't directly involved in the organization. We didn't know necessarily what was going on. But
now, let me just say, Environment Canada is the government agency, right?
Federal government agency. And so we were very involved in making sure it was publicly known, challenging a lot of the myths that we were being put out publicly about, questioning the toxicity of these chemicals and that sort of thing, and making sure that the issue was of enough sort of public importance that it was going to be addressed appropriately in the courts. There was a resolution to the illegal pesticide use. The company received one of the largest ever environmental fines in Canada for that, but it was also, it was $500,000, but that's sort of, I'm sure that's a shadow of their PR budget annually. But still, it was pretty significant. And we've been working very hard on trying to make sure the legislation around approved pesticides is more stringent. It's been getting less stringent. And our tactic on that, we haven't had direct legal tools to use really in that. But we've been heavily involved in getting coalitions going and really seeing some citizens groups take off, especially in Nova Scotia, interestingly, and then of working closely with the fishery to put pressure federally. And so that's been my major issue, has been working on salmon farms. We were involved in the coalition that got the St. Croix reopened to alewives a couple years ago. So the St. Croix used to have the largest run of alewives on the eastern seaboard. Since the 1800s, the fish have had access on and off. And then in the 70s, it was proper fish passage was built. In the 80s, and then in the 80s, the stocks rebounded. We were up at 2.5 million again. And then in the early 90s, the perfectly functioning fishways were blocked by the state of Maine because the bass fishermen upriver suspected alewives of harming bass, even though it's very unlikely that that's the case. So that got, we were very involved in a coalition there to get the river reopened, and were successful a couple years ago, and we got to do one of the funnest events of my life, which was the alewife run, where we had a flotilla of boats symbolically joining the fish in their journey upriver. And so we had boats enter from Calais, Maine, and St. Stephen, New Brunswick at the same time, the only time I've ever had to put two time zones on an event poster. And since it was, we were straddling the international border, we spoke with the various agencies ahead of time. So we had RCMP, we had Homeland Security, Fish and Wildlife Services, and Border Patrol on both sides, presumably come to support the rally. So we counted them in our rally numbers and counted their boats as part of the flotilla. But they were very supportive, and they even agreed to officially to waive the line. So if any of us accidentally crossed the line in the water, they weren't going to make us clear customs as long as we didn't touch a boat from the other country. Those are some of the issues we've been involved in. I think some of where we've been most effective, we were involved in organizing something called the Atlantic Coalition for Aquaculture Reform, which was the body I was talking about that's been quite effective, especially in Nova Scotia, at affecting the regulation of aquaculture there, but really at raising the issue of salmon farming on the Atlantic coast. It was an issue on the West Coast, but should have been an issue on the East Coast because we've been dealing with it for a long time. And we also have, you know, helped start groups like there's one in St. Andrews called Save Ocean Science, which was challenging cutbacks to government science and trying to monitor the effect of those cutbacks because it's quite significant. So where a lot of waterkeepers are involved in litigation, like Casco Baykeeper, doing direct scientific research, I guess more in the tradition of the Conservation Council where Fundy Baykeeper grew from, we've done a lot more sort of just basic organizing and advocacy work. Yeah, we do education, and we do a lot of it around. The Conservation Council worked with a Fishermen's Association to get the first marine protected area in the Bay of Fundy, which was Musquash, which is a very significant salt marsh system. And so a lot of our education work hems around that because it's a success story. It's a really good launch point because we can get people there in boats. We can, you know, it's compelling because it's governments, fisheries, and conservationists achieving something together. So it's nice to start the education work from a positive place and then discuss issues because it's much more, find it much more accessible. And it's also just more fun for me than talking about good things sometimes, especially when you're meeting with students and stuff. So we do a range, but it's, if you're thinking about a waterkeeper, it's really good to look at what different groups are doing because you do have, I think you have a bit of a grounding in citizen science. There's been some work done here, and I know it's never as much as you wish was done, but my sense is you have a pretty good framework to build on in terms of citizen science. And, you know, there have been, as I understand it, there have been a lot of people in this region trained in water quality monitoring. Even if they're not currently doing it, they could potentially be doing it in the future. You have some gear, you have some cameras. You've got some, you know, you've got experience using good aerial survey work to make change. And so, you know, I think that's, you know, you might be some of the more core scientific investigative work that an organization like Casco Baykeeper is doing might be really useful to you as well.
We think so, especially since there's a long legacy of the industrial things that took place here in the 19th and 20th centuries. Mm-hmm. And there's legacies from that. Just as GAC is one, there's the mercury coming down the river. It's another. And who knows what wastes are there coming out of Mack Point, because that's, I know there's reviewed the dredge spoils or the potential dredge spoils down there.
Well, we have a lot of scientists focused on the river, but not as many that we know of that we have found.
And we're
estuary. They're more river oriented.
We're so lucky in the Outer Bay of Fundy. We have the St. Andrews Biological Station, which is the oldest marine research stations in Canada. Potentially, it's among the oldest in North America for sure. Potentially, before some of the ones here or around the same time. And so we've got 100 years of temperature data, 100 years of turbidity data on, you know, right in the region we're focused on that we haven't had to collect. And so that's a difference too, is that we've got information to work with. And even though our science has been severely cut back, we still do have that historical data, the best around in many ways. I'm sure you've utilized the work that comes out of SABS as well and Huntsman. And so that's a difference for us too.
You know, a wonderful thing here is both the universities and the public library in Bangor have kept the old 1800s till 1920 or so fish commission and sea and shore fisheries and things that occurred before Department of Marine Resources took place. And they have lots of info from back then.
Yeah.
And I haven't ever done this pull out things that are like pull out the environmental data, but I think it can be done because each researcher is carefully making note of all mm-hmm. these things, this date and time and location. I think it could be pulled out of that. Mm-hmm. That's, you're right about a baseline.
Yeah.